Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, February 20th, 2020. We'll start with a story that is titled, Council Denies Rezoning Request. This is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. And there's a picture of a vehicle parked in one of the city's downtown lots, sports a ticket on its windshield. Danville City Council member decided Tuesday to increase downtown parking ticket fines. A rezoning for a business north of the city needed 10 alderman votes, or two-thirds of the city council, for approval since the Zoning Commission earlier this month recommended denial by a 3-3 vote. It didn't receive it. The Danville City Council voted 7-6 Tuesday night with Ward 4 alderman for Alderman Mike O'Kane absent to approve a request from Robert Brennan with his Route 1 store North Lock to rezone the property at 15952 Potter's Woods Road from AG agriculture zoning to B2 highway business zoning to allow for automobile sales and continuation of current use. The vote meant the rezoning request was denied. Aldermen voting against it were R.J. Davis, Dan Duchesne, James Pochard, Tom Stone, Robert Williams, and Sherry Pickering. Aldermen heard from several nearby residents who voiced concerns about lighting, traffic, and other issues, mainly of what could go on the site, such as a gas station if the owner sold the rezoned property. The rezoning also conflicts with the city's long-range comprehensive land use plan and exiting zoning of adjacent parcels, and there was the potential for spot zoning. The property north of the city is within the city's 1.5-mile zoning jurisdiction. Brennan said about selling cars, it's kind of like a side job, said the site, and the site would remain storage units well into the future. Aaron Hoff, who lives in that area on Old Seton Hill Road, said there are lots of new families with children in that area. She also commented on the wildlife in the wooded area that could be impacted. She doesn't want to see it turn into a commercial area. She said it's a nice, quiet neighborhood, and it's scary to think what business could go in there in the future with the rezoning. When Brennan bought the property, the use was grandfathered in. There was no zoning for the property until Walmart was built, city officials said about the property's distance to the city's limits. In other business, council members heard a presentation from Green Growth Group Incorporated. It is seeking a special use permit to allow for indoor craft cannabis cultivation in the 12 General Industrial Zoning District at warehouses at 202 and 204 East Gate Drive. The Zoning Commission will act on the permit request on March 5th. Simone Grimes with Green Growth Group said they plan to submit a license application to the state on March 13th for operation. The state is expected to issue licenses in July. Aldermen learned the city won't receive city sales tax from the business, but Green Growth is offering 3% on annual earnings before taxes to partner with the city on substance abuse prevention and other programs required by the state and community beautification investments such as parks and other projects. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said this could range from about $60,000 the first year to $300,000 after the third year. Green Growth doesn't sell directly to consumers, but plans to distribute the product to dispensaries across Illinois. Grimes said dispensaries don't have sufficient supply, and they are seeing shortages. She said they'll have 25 new full-time jobs with the plan to hire locally. They'll have an experienced master grower and lab technicians. It's a very high-tech environment, Grimes said. Green Growth Grimes and Gary Oliver said they'll be a good neighbor. They won't have signage, their transportation vehicles will be low profile and will be tracked, and there will be several security layers. It would start with out with 5,000 square feet of space and grow in phases of 17,400 square feet. About 70% will be for infused products, with the remaining 30% flower product. Thank you for choosing Danville, said Duchesne. The council by by a 9-4 vote also approved increasing parking violation ticket fees in the downtown area. Alderman Brenda Brown, James Poshard, Tom Stone, and Robert Williams voted against it. Okay, next story is titled Danville Man Among Those Arrested in FBI Operation in Kankakee, and it's written by a staff reporter in Urbana. The Danville man was among the 15 Central Illinois men arrested during the weekend related to an FBI operation conducted in Kankakee County, according to Central District of Illinois U.S. Attorney John C. Millheiser and FBI Special Agent in Charge Sean M. Cox, Springfield Division. Cole Montgomery, 25, of the 17300 block of 2400 North Road, Danville, faces charges of attempted enticement of a minor and attempted sexual exploitation of a child, according to information in the Army, in the U.S. Attorney's Office. The men have been charged in separate criminal complaints with attempted enticement of a child to engage in illegal sexual activity. Some have also been charged with attempted sexual exploitation of children. The complaints were unsealed on February 18th, as each made their respective initial appearances in federal court in Urbana. Each was ordered detained pending hearings scheduled later this week. The operation was conducted with the coordination and assistance of the Bradley Police Department, the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office, and the Kankakee Area Metropolitan Enforcement Group. According to the affidavits filed in the support of the complaints, each of the men allegedly used various social media applications to contact and engage online with FBI covert employees posing as 14 and 15-year-old minors to make arrangements to meet the minor girl or boy with the intent to engage in sexual activity. Some of the men attempted to entice or coerce the minors to send them sexually explicit images. As the men arrived at or near the designated area address in Bradley, they were arrested and taken into custody by FBI special agents, the Bradley Police Department, the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office, and the Kankakee Area Metropolitan Enforcement Group. Assistant U.S. Attorney Ellie M. Pearson is representing the government in the case. Prosecutions. The defendants charged in this operation with attempted enticement of a minor are Joshua T. Koenig, 27 of Buckley, Jody L. Geese, 45 of Kankakee, Shane R. Ferris, 23 of Bourbonnais, Nick Vincent Sr., 25 of Kankakee, Del Martin Alvin Searing, 26 of Bradley, Robert Sean Anderson, 50 of Paxton, Brian Rossi, 29 of Park Forest, and Timothy Lyle Dean, 37, of Bourbonnais. The defendants, in addition to Montgomery, charged in this operation with attempted enticement of a minor and attempted sexual exploitation of a child were Matthew T. Gribben, 48, of Kankakee, Ryan I. Woodruff, 21, of Kankakee, Amal Chu, 28, of St. Anne, Kyron Williams, 30, of Kankakee, Joseph Adam Logan Necker, 40, of Mantino, and Jazzy Simmons, 28, of Kankakee. If convicted for the offense of attempted enticement of a minor, each defendant faces a minimum of 10 years and up to life in prison. For the offense of attempted sexual exploitation of a child, each defendant faces a minimum of 15 years and up to 30 years in prison. These cases were brought as part of a Project Safe Childhood, a nationwide initiative by the Department of Justice to combat child sexual exploitation and abuse. Okay, the next story is titled Man Held on Firearm Charges, and this is written by a staff reporter in Danville. A Danville man was arrested Friday on several firearm charges. Dakota A. Patton, 23, of Danville, was taken into custody on charges of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, possession of a stolen firearm, and possession of a firearm without a FOID card by a convicted felon. Patton was arraigned in Vermilion County Court, and bond was set at $750,000, 10% for his release. Commander Joshua Webb said, Danville police responded about 8:34 p.m. to the area of Griffin and Cleveland Streets for a report of shots fired. Upon arrival, officers observed a pickup truck leaving the area and a traffic stop was conducted. Officers spoke with the occupants about the calls of shots fired in the area. As officers received more information, a search of the vehicle was conducted and officers located a handgun inside the truck. After locating the handgun, they took Patton into custody. The investigation into this incident continues and no other information is being released at this time. Anyone who has information regarding this incident is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or call Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. Okay, we'll run through the obituaries. Albert Laverne Johnson, Jr., 73, of Danville, passed away at 2:58 p.m. Thursday, February 13th. Albert will be cremated as per his wishes. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville at 3940 North Vermilion Street is handling arrangements. Memorial donations may be placed in Albert's name to Riley Children's Hospital or St. Jude's Hospital. Frieda Alice Croat, 100, of Lender, Texas, formerly of Danville, passed away on February 12, 2020, at River Ridge Assisted Living. Visitation will be on Thursday, February 20th, at Cougar Cone Pape Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville, from 4 to 6 p.m. Services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, February 21st, at the funeral home with Pastor Doug Knapp officiating. Burial will follow at Atherton Cemetery with military honors by American Legion Post 210. Memorials may be made in Frieda's name to the Vermilion County War Museum. Cynthia Buttrick, 65, of Danville, died Thursday, February 6, at University Rehabilitation Center in Urbana. A memorial service will be at 1 p.m. Saturday at Second Church of Christ, 3350 East 40th Street in Danville. Ileana Cremation Society, P.O. Box 1906, Danville, is in charge of the arrangements. Tammy Fields, 57, of Danville, died at 5:02 a.m. Monday, February 10th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Monday at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Pastor Thomas William will officiate. Visitation will be at 10 a.m. Monday at the church. Leek & Sons Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Eugene Fritsch, 91, of Danville, died at 9:38 a.m. Tuesday, February 18th at Colonial Manor in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home in Danville. Michael Wayne Thornsboro, a longtime resident of Westville, died after a long illness on Wednesday, February 12th at the age of 73. A celebration of Mike's life will be Saturday, February 22nd at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 414 South State Street in Westville. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. with memorial service at 2 p.m. And Wallace Wiley Sr., 68, of Danville, died at 12:18 p.m. Thursday, February 13th at home. Funeral services will be at noon on Saturday at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville, with Pastor Thomas Miller officiating. Burial will be in Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be at 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Okay, the next story is titled Music Poetry Highlight DACC Event, and this is written by Carol Rome in Danville, and there's a picture of Kelsey Coleman, who is a Project Success Site Coordinator at Southview Upper Elementary School, sings Amazing Grace with Admissions Office Specialist Stephen Scott Wednesday morning during a Black History Month event at Danville Area Community College. Music and poetry filled the student union Wednesday morning at Danville Area Community College, the second of three Black History Month events at the college, titled Today, Evolution of Gospel, gave students an opportunity to experience spiritual hymns and spoken word as they were taken on a journey through Black history. Participants included Kelsey Coleman, who is the author of two spoken word books, DACC graphic design instructor Dwight Lucas II, who played the saxophone, and DACC admissions office specialist Stephen Scott, who sang. Lucas performed Amazing Grace and God is Working on his saxophone. I'm 37 and I have been playing the saxophone since I was 12 or 13 years old, he said. This is a soprano saxophone, but I play alto saxophone too. Coleman and Scott sang their rendition of Amazing Grace before Coleman read spoken word poetry from her new book, Letters to the Little Girl Inside Me, that was just released earlier this week. The book is a sequel to Coleman's first spoken word book, Chapter 24, Her Heart, from which she read three poems during the event. After my first book, I still had more to say, she explained. This book is the healing process that comes after that. Chapter 24 is about learning you have a voice and that you should use it, she said. In this new book, I'm talking to the child within me. The preface of her new book asks readers to think about what they would say to the little boy or little girl within themselves that would help them to grow up. Coleman said her new book is about growing up and accepting things that you can't change. She said she has come to realize that the fear she has struggled with in the past has held her back from what God wants me to do. If you focus on the impossible, you can't grow past it, she said. As I grow and change it and evolve, I hope I can help other people through my writing, she added. I do it for myself and I do it for others. Writing has become a therapeutic outlet for Coleman, who said she is at a loss for words in explaining her process. It's God speaking through me, she said. Kenya Love, one of the DACC students who attended Wednesday's event, lamented that the program was so brief. The spoken word presentation was Love's favorite. Kelsey's poetry was wonderful, she said. The third and final DACC event tomorrow, Black History and Its Future, will take place from 11 to 1 p.m. Monday in the Student Union in Lincoln Hall. The event will look at the future through the eyes of Meade Park Elementary School students, along with guest speaker Nicole Carter, a nursing instructor at DACC. A video the Meade Park students made highlighting the positives around Danville will be shown. Carter will speak in future opportunities and challenges in healthcare for African Americans. Refreshments will be served. And for more information about Danville, For more information about Danville, author Kelsey Coleman and her books, Chapter 24, Her Heart, and Letters to the Little Girl Inside of Me, please go to her website at www.queencamillesheart24.com. It's www.queencamillesheart24.com. On her Facebook page is Queen Dome Heart. Okay, the next story is Bright Star, Vibrant with Music, Dancing, and this is written by Mary Wyckoff in Danville. It's fitting with the Majestic Fisher Theater that the Majestic Fisher Theater will be in the setting for Bright Star, a sweeping tale of love and redemption. DLO Music Theater will present the musical at 7:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday and at 2 p.m. Sunday at the Fisher in downtown Danville. Dinner will be served before the show for those who reserve seats. The music is awesome and it's a neat story. I love it, stage director Jody Proser-Mueller said. People will feel the emotion and get caught up in it. Vocal director Lucinda Lawrence of Champaign said Bright Star is a fairly new work, adding, I'm so proud of DLO for taking it on. I'm just loving it. The play is inspired by a real event and features the Grammy-nominated score by actor-comedian Steve Martin and Edie Brickell. Bright Star is set against the rich backdrop of the American South in the 1940s with flashbacks to the 1920s. When a literary editor Alice Murphy, Angie Rooley, meets a young soldier just home from World War II, he awakens her longing for the child she once lost. Haunted by their unique connection, Alice sets out on a journey to understand her past, and what she finds has the power to transform both of their lives. With 30 actors plus an orchestra, it's a pretty big show, Prosser Mueller said. The cast comes from all over the area, including Elliott, Champaign, Peoria, Springfield, and Indiana. It was easy to get people involved, Prosser Mueller said, explaining, it's one of those shows, once you see it, you want to be involved. She added, it has dark moments, but it ends with hope. The production is suitable for children. The music reflects the time period and the place, North Carolina, featuring bluegrass, folk, and Americana music. Different styles of dancing are performed as well, including swing and a type of square dance. The music and dances show a huge range of emotion, from silly and fun to heartbreaking. It's a glorious music. It's glorious music, Lawrence said. Everyone can and does sing, she said. During auditions, there was such a wealth of talent that it was difficult making casting choices. The 10-member pit orchestra, directed by Chris Huffman, includes keyboard, drums, violin, guitar, and bass. Even the main character picks up a violin and plays. The ensemble moves the set pieces and sings off stage, but the wings aren't closed so the audience can see them. Lawrence said it's thrilling to present the musical in the Fisher, adding what an asset Danville has. The renovations are tremendous. Research has shown that having a theater helps a town to thrive, she said. She's also impressed with the wealth of the theater entertainment groups in the area. DLO is a member of the American Association of Community Theater, and Lawrence is a member of its board of directors. She is retired from the University of Illinois School of Music. She's telling people, don't miss this fun and exciting musical. The cast includes Angie Rooley as Alice, Nancy Keener as Mama Murphy, Eric France as Daddy Murphy, Cameron Sheets as Jimmy Ray, Rodney Woodworth as the mayor, Joe Sandusky as Sanford, Brian Good as Billy Kane, Aaron Martin as Daddy Kane, Rui Sandusky as Margot, Cindy Davis as Lucy, Craig Krukowet as Daryl, Sydney Smith as Edna, Savannah Baird as Florence, Sebastian Skinner as Max, Mark Mueller as Dr. Norquist, and Jean Dunn as government clerk. Spirits are portrayed by Kelly Carlton, Amanda Cuton, Aubrey Falconio, Crystal Sanford, also Flo and Edna. An additional cast includes Zach Carlson, Jean Fall, Susie Goldman, Terry Sturdivant, and Mac Waits and Michelle Waits. Heather Maya Gee is producer. For those with dinner reservations, the meal will be served in an elegant conference room in the mezzanine level. Okay, next story is Hoopston OK's police contract, and this is written by Carol Hicks in Hoopston. City Council approved the Fraternal Order of Police contract Tuesday that includes a 2.8% wage increase retroactive of May of 2019. The contract also included a 2.8% wage increase next year and a two-year cap on the clothing allowance for officers. Officers receive $400 a year for clothing. Alderman Alex Humes abstained due to the fact that he hadn't seen a copy of the contract. Six councilmen voted for the contract. Alderman Carl Enkenbrand said the police department window was tinted as part of the security for the department. The city gave a deposit on the security equipment to start installation to secure the city offices and bought a printer to make badges for city employees to enter the secure areas of the building. In other business, there were no bids on the old jet truck. A proposal was received for $6,000 to purchase the jet truck by Drennan Septic Service of Danville. Council approved unanimously to waive bids for the jet truck and approved unanimously the sale of the jet truck to Drennan Septic Service for $6,000. They also learned Eric Lambert was hired on the street and alley department. Alderman Bill Goodwine reported the city will have a $40,000 windfall and discussed whether the cemetery website was more important than a canine unit or some other things that might be needed. He suggested putting the money into general fund for next year's budget or the reserve fund. The reserve fund has $1.8 million in it, according to Goodwine, adding that he couldn't see spending $23,000 for a cemetery website. There was one communication from Police Chief Jim DeWitt that Officer Clayton Cahoo took a job with the county and would be leaving February 23rd. When Cahoo finished his county training, he will return part-time for the Hoopston Department. Fire Chief Joel Bird informed the council that a live burn would take place Sunday inside a building in the 900 block of the East Wyman-McNeil area without use of the hydrants in the area. The next city council meeting will begin at 7 p.m. on March 3rd in the city hall. It's a slow news day in the local area, which is kind of good. Nothing bad, I guess. So I will read this. It's Trump picks pardon request from wealthy pals and GOP donors, written in Washington by the Associated Press. There's a common thread among the 11 felons who found favor with President Donald Trump this week. All who were pardoned or set free had advocates among the president's wealthy friends and political allies. In at least some cases, including former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich and 80s junk bond king Michael Milken, Trump has personal relationships with those he granted clemency to. In three others, he drew on the recommendations of a Tennessee grandmother he'd previously granted clemency at the urging of reality TV star Kim Kardashian West. "I rely on recommendations very importantly," Trump said Tuesday as he announced his decisions. But, as with other aspects of Trump's presidencies, the president has veered from institutional norms. Historically, those recommended for presidential pardons are vetted through a formal process in which their petitions are reviewed by a team of Justice Department lawyers. In those past cases, typically there has been either strong evidence of wrongful conviction or the offenders have expressed remorse for their crimes and spent decades making amends. Tuesday's announcement from the White House instead often sought to minimize the severity of the crimes that had been committed and listed the names of GOP mega donors, celebrities, and Fox News personalities who had advocated for the felons to get a break. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and his client, former Simplicity Corporation CEO Ariel Friedler, was pardoned after he personally vouched for the businessman during a call with Trump on Friday. A former federal prosecutor and cable news regular, Christie said it was the only time he discussed Friedler's case with Trump. "Are you convinced he's a really good guy, Christie?" a Republican says Trump asked him, recounting the conversation Tuesday in an interview with New Jersey Advance Media. Friedler pleaded guilty in 2014 to conspiracy to hack into the computer systems of one of his business competitors, serving 2 months in prison. "Yes, Mr. President," Christie said. He replied, "Mr. President, he got treated wrong, and you can help him write it now." Okay, just a couple quick community briefs. In Danville, the Knights plan a meal. The Knights of Columbus at 310 Bryan Avenue will serve a Swiss steak dinner from 5:30 to 7 on Friday. The cost will be $10. All are welcome. The Dixie Flyer Band will perform from 7 to 10 p.m. Cost is $5. And the census, those interested in becoming a census taker can apply from 1 to 5:30 on February 28th at the Catlin Public Library. Applicants must be at least 18 years old and a citizen of the United States. Diane Lane from the Census Bureau will be at the library to answer any questions. And that'll be it for today, Thursday, February 20th, 2020. Supposed to be nice this weekend. Hopefully no rain coming in sight and warming up a little bit. So hopefully you all have a good week and I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.